Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Comté Cheese Association. Comté, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at comté-usa.com. That's comté-usa.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kara Warren, and today on the show, we have Mary Casella, a Brooklyn cheesemonger and educator whose research is dedicated to the subject of women and dairy. In fact, last spring, she became the first recipient of the Daphne Zepos Research Award, and has spent the past year researching the history and legacy of women in dairy. I love that. She most recently presented her work at the ACS Portland. Mary, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kara. I am very excited to be here.
I mean, and we're, I want to say it again, live in person.
This is incredible. I'm a little scared to be live.
No, it makes it better. It makes it more fun. You're in a shipping container. Hopefully you're not sensitive to small spaces.
Yeah, and the number of Cutting the Curd episodes I've listened to and be like, this is where it all happens.
Yeah, legendary. Ann Saxelby was once here. Greg Blaze, Elena, Aaron, Diane.
Yeah.
You're really here.
It's incredible. It's fun.
Did you expect it to look like a wooden ship inside as well?
No, actually, I had no idea. When I walked in, I was like, the Heritage Radio Station? Where do I find that?
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've been to Roberta's, but coming back here, I don't think I ever noticed this space before.
No, and it's funny. I always wonder if the host or hostess will know that it's a shipping container with a radio station because the complex is so large, and they actually do. So it's good news. So I wanted to ask you, because I was at ACS as well. How was it for you?
It was a whirlwind. It was fantastic. But so sadly / very happily, I had to dash back to the East Coast because one of my best friends was getting married that weekend.
What? So, tell them about the wedding. That's silly. That's so messed up.
I wouldn't have missed that for the world. So I was only there for a couple of days, but it was really cool to just see some people I hadn't seen, meet new people, got to experience a couple really great talks and tastings. And then it also just felt really amazing to finally get my presentation out into the world. And I'm not great at public speaking. I'm a little shy. And it was incredible that all of my nerves just kind of floated away. And I had a really warm reception, which was incredible. And so that was really nice to just kind of put a bookend on the work that I had done with this presentation and finally share what I had been building up all year to share. Yeah.
So that was the first round of presenting for you at ACS.
Okay. Yes.
I thought you did great.
Thank you.
And I will say that when I was 5 minutes late to get in, and it was packed, and it was a standing room and the level of women that were standing on the sides, the importance of industry women, I was just like, it really took me back. It was really moving to see everyone admiring your presentation.
Yeah, so. I was kind of took it in, but I also kept my glasses off so I wouldn't see faces and get nervous.
Put
them back on for the questions after. It was really incredible to see that many people show up. And like you said, some faces that I know and admire and people there who have been supporting me along the way. It was really incredible. And I think that that's even the bigger, better thing is just seeing all those women there was really it meant a lot to me because that's what I'm doing this work for, is all of these women.
Right. Yeah. Right. And so the reception of it was good, I take it.
Yes.
After you did the presentation.
Yeah.
Good reception. Okay, cool. So the title of your program is Women's Work, The History and Legacy of Women in Dairy. What brought you to the subject?
So I think, you know, like when I first got started working in cheese, obviously cheese is delicious and I love to eat cheese. And it was ultimately like, I think the history and the culture and the people behind like where cheese comes from that ultimately like captivated me. And it's why I'm still working in this industry today. And the more I continued to work, and I just happened to meet one amazing woman after the next. And in my search to learn more about both cheese and the history of cheese, I really wanted to know more about women's roles in this work, in this business, in this now industry and like entire culture. And I think also like a little bit crept in of my schooling of like art history and photography, and just seeing like depictions of dairy maids all the time, or like in literature, like dairy maids. And that all kind of culminated in feeling like there wasn't anything available that really got to like a deeper exploration of just how significant women were to this industry, you know, like
right.
You have your little blurbs about like the actual like definition of a dairy maid or definition of a milkmaid. And then of course, like, you know, the like women who have been so significant to building, like, I mean, essentially creating what the American like artisanal cheese scene is today, you know, they get recognized, but even still, like kind of in a sidebar way. So I wanted to, one, more know, like know more about the history, and then also expand that into like, okay, well, who's working today and what are we doing? And even when you look just at like social media, I feel like, and this, you know, I don't mean to like disrespect any like of our like male, like coworkers and you know, people in this industry, but like, I just feel like so much of the work that is being done comes from women. So yeah, that's the long and the short of it.
No, it's a true theme in the cheese industry. I'm glad you're looking into it. And I'm glad that you're looking at it through an anthropological lens. I mean, that's, it sounds like that's where you're headed, at least in the research.
Yeah, totally. Because I was, so me saying that like there wasn't any like, what's the word I want to say? Like a complete book of like women and dairy or something. Like
there isn't one right now.
No. Huh. But there is actually a lot of resources out there, like on the internet, like your databases and everything about the history of women and dairy. And, you know, that is still really important to me. But then ultimately it's me thinking, well, I can just share what these resources are with other people and they can read that history and take what they want from it. But then in terms of like what I can do that is perhaps more significant is actually reach out to women who, in other words, like maybe don't have the time to put themselves out there more. They don't have like the, you know, the access or the tools to, you know, share their stories. And I think that's, yeah, like ultimately what has been so exciting and rewarding, at times like a little nerve wracking for me.
Sure.
Again, a little shy, but every time it's just been, I step away from a chat, whether it's like on the phone or like actually seeing them in person, just like in awe and grateful for them sharing their story and their time.
No, that's really very, very cool. So when I saw your presentation in Portland, I noticed you had three different women that you profiled, and they were, it seemed like different demographics, different backgrounds. Was that on purpose?
Yeah. And, you know, I think also ultimately, like when I first set out on this research and I was like, oh, well, all these like incredibly important women I need to speak to. And I would still one day like to have, you know, these conversations with, you know, like your Mary Quicks and everything like
totally.
That.
Yeah.
But in another aspect of my work is, you know, looking outside Europe and America, like the two, like these spaces that we
totally.
See as like the dominant cheese cultures. And the incredible thing, like women's work is shared around the world. And when we think about like domestic work and work in the kitchen, that is a, you know, I could be wrong, but based on my research, this kind of work globally and culturally is done by women. And so I still have a lot of work to do to like look in other parts of the world, but it was really important to me to not focus strictly on like European cheesemakers, American cheesemakers, like these cultures where we think of like predominant dairy cultures. Like dairy culture exists almost globally, not necessarily in the same capacity, but you know, like in like even in like the mountains of Iran to like some parts of on like in Africa, you know. So having that diversity was and is still very important to me.
No, that's great. I'm glad you're going to be like traveling the globe and looking into the nexus of like where women are doing this, because it's part of their everyday life. And I can see how that could be an interesting research topic. There's a lot of details that can come from that that I hope to see in one day a book or more presentations. Yeah. I think that's really, really cool, because you're right. There isn't a source quite yet for it.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. No, that's cool. So was it, did you feel like when the Daphne Zephas program gave you this grant, how did that make you feel about this idea that you had? Did it give you like fulfillment, or was it like you felt more appreciated? Like, what was the value of that?
Oh my God. I was absolutely giddy when I got it. I couldn't believe it. Because I had been encouraged for like quite a few years now to like, submit a proposal back when like it was just only the teaching award and the research award didn't exist. And, you know, it was kind of like,
because you're the first research award.
Yeah,
this is different than the previous
exactly.
award, which is more in the field, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, it was always like, oh, I don't really think like I have anything concrete, and, you know, I don't feel confident in anything that's like not necessarily worthy, but like doesn't seem super like, you know, I just don't have it all together. And then when I saw that the research award was created, I had kind of just recently just been more and more been doing like a lot of reading and research on my own. And when I saw that, I was like, all right, I know exactly what I want to propose. And when I got it, I couldn't believe it. And, you know, it felt one, like considering my topic, it felt amazing to like receive it from the Daphne Zephas Teaching Endowment, you know, like for Daphne, like talk about someone who we like owe a lot of like legacy and credit to. And then it was just kind of like, it was really gratifying in that, you know, this work I had been doing just like sitting on my couch and like being like, oh, maybe I'll share this on Instagram and like maybe somebody will see it and think it's cool. And then being like actually being told, no, like this is valuable and important work and we're going to give you the tools to do like further work with it. That was like kind of my, you know, almost like a dream job, you know, like I feel like when I would like say watching the History Channel and you're being like, and so-and-so an expert in this field. And you're like, you make a career out of being an expert in this field. It felt a little bit like that, where like, you're giving me money to research women in dairy, like, and I get to just do what I want with it. It was really, I'm still like thankful. And it sounds a little hyperbolic, but I really do feel like this like has changed the course of my life, kind of.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's super freaking cool. I'm super stoked to see what happens for you upcoming. Yeah. I'm curious, what kind of guidance are they offering you as part of this program? Do they help you at all? Or is it like, here's the money and they run away?
No, they've been super helpful. Everyone on the Daphne Zephas Teaching Endowment Board were so helpful. We would have kind of like bi-monthly check-ins, see where I'm doing. And like, I'm a procrastinator. And, you know, I'd be like, yeah, no, things are going great. Things are going great. And they would be. And I was doing the work. They were there to like, and it like, even people who weren't technically on the board, but like say had like received the grant previously, like I had a lot of like previous grant winners reach out to me and say like, hey, anyone I can connect you with, even like the community at large was just like, let me know.
Cool.
We would have like our kind of monthly check-ins and then, I mean, really when they were, I think they became most helpful and honestly, like kind of what helped guide my final presentation was again, I got kind of like stuck on all of this history that I had learned because I was like, whoa, there is all this information out here. And I'm just like, want to share this all. And I got a little too bombarded by all the history and lost sight of like actually sharing the stories that I had gathered thus far. So they were super helpful and like guiding me and kind of, you know, clear, like making sure I didn't get lost in the weeds, which it can be very easy to do.
Oh yeah. I mean, I feel like when I prepare for episodes, I can get like that too. It's just like, there's so much, it's like a rock that you have to move.
Yeah.
So I'm so glad that they were there for you. You mentioned stories from the people that, from the women that you got to meet. What is like one of the standout memorable stories that you have from meeting one of these women that you spoke with?
I gotta say, I think it is going to be meeting Dona Rosa in Oaxaca, which I went...
In Mexico.
Yes, in Mexico.
Wow.
This past spring. And so I had... received an opportunity to go kind of do this like independent study at a space called Poco a Poco in Oaxaca. And like I applied in the presentation that like I was researching women in dairy and I wanted to learn more about the culture, like the dairy culture in Mexico. And so I was in Oaxaca and, you know, one of the like, I feel like there are so many Mexican cheeses that we don't actually know about in the United States, but of course, quesillo or queso Oaxaca, you know, is in grocery stores. And I wanted to, I'm near Oaxaca, queso Oaxaca, and then Etna is a little north of Oaxaca, and that's actually where queso originated. And on a whim, I took a cab up to Etna and
You Ubered?
Yeah, I had to take
sorry, that's awesome.
I had to take a joint taxi back down to Oaxaca City, which was fun and interesting.
Amazing.
But I stumbled upon, I found Rosa's listing on like Google Maps, just trying to find a cheesemaker. And lo and behold, I had like just, like she had just had her curd setting. And in my very broken Spanish, I asked if I could watch her make cheese. And she said yes. And I spent a couple hours with her. And you know, I think, and it really like struck home this idea of women's work because I mean, it was basically, it was her home that she was producing this cheese in, and her daughter came by and helped her a little bit. And, you know, I can, again, because my Spanish isn't very good, I couldn't get like that much, you know, actual information from her, but I could just sense that like, she has been doing this for years, and in whatever capacity that she has been doing, it is servicing her community, it's servicing her family. And I think that really is like reflective of what women's work has been, regard like even outside of cheese, just like women's work in the home,
right?
And how so much of cheese history has been women making cheese in the home. And then a very nice new current turn of events is a fellow cheesemonger, Pamela Rubio, who she was at Fairfield in Connecticut recently, and she's actually just now off to Mons.
Oh, cool.
She's Mexican, and she was back home recently, and she met Rosa. And I am, like, through me having heard about Rosa, and she was able to go see Rosa, and of course, because she's Mexican, she can, you know, have a deeper experience with her. And I think, like, I'm so excited that she got to do that, and, like, I met Pamela just on Instagram, and that has been a beautiful experience of just like through this research, you know, Instagram can be like such a crazy world that like,
sure,
you know, but like strangers reaching out to me through Instagram, talking, like saying how much they appreciate the research that I'm doing. And then like finally meeting Pamela just a few weeks ago, and then
it's a small
her
world.
Going to see Rosa, and like she got, like she just told me she got to see Rosa, and you know, and I'm just like so happy that that whole interaction got to happen, that like because of me being able to go see someone, another like fellow cheesemonger, fellow woman got to go see Rosa.
What a cool experience.
Yeah, so I just hope that more more occurrences like that happen.
You're definitely influencing people in a very cool way. I noticed on the Instagram, because I did check this out, that your experience in Oaxaca, even to see the cheese making skill, like the way she moved her arms and hands and like just the natural organic nature of that cheese making. What a wild thing to see.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, like, I think that goes back to like, for me, really strikes home of like women in the kitchen in the way, like the tradition of women sharing food knowledge with other generations. I was like, I think I said this in my presentation. I definitely said it in my proposal. It's just like, you know, it's the consummate, like, woman is homemaker or like home cook and like man is chef. But like, who do we mostly learn all of our food traditions from? It's from our mothers and our grandmothers and our aunts and our sisters. But women are just like relegated to the home and are never the professional, you know, it's just like a hobby or a craft.
Right. Is it like her know-how that you saw? Is she passing it on to her daughters or other family members or?
So her daughter did help her like pack out some cheeses, like put some queso fresco in some forms, but it didn't appear to be too involved in the cheese making. And like, fortunately, I wasn't able to like ask well enough, but I can't wait to see what Pamela was able to like get from her and see.
Totally. I'm curious, a collaboration there.
She did say, Rosa did say that like she learned it from her mother.
Cool.
So yeah, that tradition is there, but like, I hope she passes it.
Yeah.
Is passing it on to someone.
I mean, the way that she could tell the curd was set and then like just moving the curd around. I don't know. I mean, she looks sharp and seems very with it. I was like, wow, I wonder what would happen if everyone made cheese at old age.
Right?
Like, would they survive forever?
I know. Just like
keeping them sharp. Through cheese making. We'll just keep putting all our old timers into cheese making. You heard it here first on Cutting the Curd. So there was a point that you made about, you know, male versus female, but I think I'll leave that alone for now, actually. Maybe it's not smart to go that way.
No.
But do you think they're different, actually? Do you think that there's a difference between women cheesemakers and male?
Because I've never personally made cheese, like, I don't know that I can speak to that necessarily. I think I can speak to working amongst other men in this industry and like interacting as a cheesemonger on the other side of the counter of like male customers. And I think, you know, very like none of the women that I've spoke to have like outrightly said like, you know, there's these like really blatant like issues between like men and women cheesemakers, but there are certain experiences I think that many women go through, whether it's like a socialized or like biological thing that lends certain qualities to whether it's like managing your animals or the actual like cheese making process.
That's a very interesting
point. You know, whether it's things of like women, like it's like instilled in us from a young age to like be patient, be quiet, be small. You know, we empathize with other people. And, you know, I think one of the things that I heard from a couple women is like, I don't know, women work smarter. We're not about showing just like brute strength. You know, the number of times I've seen like a fellow cheesemonger like go and break a wire because they thought they could just like, you know, plow through you know.
Sorry, that's just great right
cheese,
there.
You know, and it's just like,
yeah,
I do think in certain capacity, again, this isn't like, I don't want to make any blanket statements.
Absolutely.
You know, but for the most part, I think women just work smarter. We have like, we have different spatial awareness, you know, again, like patience and empathy and, you know, like I didn't want to like, cause I don't think it's, like a complete blanket statement, but like in terms of like, you know, it's hard to ignore the like maternal, like women, you know, milk and like, you know, but like it is, that correlation is there. And like, as if, like, if you are a mother and you're like your animals, like you're having that bond, that experience of like knowing another mother, that kind of relationship. But of course that's not every woman. That's not every cheesemaker.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, there's nuances and, some are, I'm sure, positive and create new things, and others are detriments, but then they're challenges that people overcome. It's very, it's going to be very cool to see, again, in your research, how you note this and what science you can bring to this.
And like, you know, I don't know, I might be going off on a tangent now, but there's just so many things where like, even like, you know, like decades ago when like, even like land gets passed on to the sun, that sort of thing, or like when like technology, in like machines get developed, they get developed for like the size of a man. There's just so many things that it can seem like you're taking it like a little too serious, but then you're like, no, like this actually, like this, so many things are designed for a man run world. And it is, you know, outside the realm of cheese, within the realm of cheese. And there are just, I think, so many really interesting things to look at. And that's why I feel like this research is just going to like keep going and keep going.
No, it's super valuable. I mean, I hear you. I've been to cheesemaking facilities where, it's completely men and the women are just in the packing room.
Yeah.
And that is really annoying because maybe they should be making cheese too.
Yeah.
So I hear you on that. on a quick note, we are going to take a quick break.
Great.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Cutting Curd. This is, I'm Kara Warren and we're here with Mary and we'll be right back.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Conte Cheese Association. Conte Cheese Association represents the Conte PDO, Conte Protected Designation of Origin in the USA. Conte is a raw milk cooked pressed cheese from the Jura Mountains of France. There, every day, 2,500 family farms deliver milk to over 150 local cheesemaking facilities, or fruitiers. This milk must be transformed into Conte within 24 hours of milking to preserve the lactic microflora in the milk, ensuring the cheese's aromatic potential. About 105 gallons of milk are required to craft a single wheel of Conte. Conte takes time to acquire its flavors in the affinage cellars. After 8 months of aging by dedicated affineurs on average, each wheel of Conte is graded and shipped to market. No wheel of Conte is the same. Its flavors speak to the pastures where the cows grazed, the season in which it was made, the particular craftsmanship of the cheesemaker, and the time spent in the aging cellar. Therefore, every wheel of Conte is unique. Learn more about Conte, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at conte-usa.com. That's conte-usa.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to Cutting the Curd. I'm your host, Kara Warren. I am here with Mary Casella, and we are talking about women in cheese and how they are working in dairy culture and different anthropological aspects, history aspects. And one day Mary's going to write a book for us. maybe in 5 years' time, we'll be talking about a book with her. But right now, we just came back. She finished an ACS presentation. And now we're going to talk about what's next for her. Are you doing... I've heard from Daphne Zephos, the association, that they're going to do a virtual thing then again.
Yes.
Is that what's coming up?
We haven't announced it yet, but yes, that is correct. And it is slated for the 26th of September.
Yeah, I think I heard that too. I think you're right.
So I think like 8 p.m., but I'm sure there will absolutely be an announcement. So, but you know, mark your calendars if you want to tune in there.
And, yes. Cause we're going to make sure this is the reminder episode. If you're listening to we're promoting Mary for her virtual thing. So get there.
Don't miss it. If you were at my presentation in ACS, this will be a little different. You know, there will still be some similar material in there, but it won't be exactly the same as my ACS presentation.
There's bonus material?
Yes.
Yes, I love it. Oh, man, that's awesome. So you mentioned, well, I wonder where I should go with. Now, you were in New York City as a cheesemonger. Mm-hmm. Did you ever imagine you'd be at this point? Like now you're cheesemongering to researcher?
Never. You know, I even just the way I stumbled into working in cheese and then be like, and sometimes I like sheepishly when people ask what I do, I'm like, I work in cheese. And right. Like, and most people are like, oh, wow, that's so cool. And I'm like, oh, yeah, it is. It's really cool. But like, no, I wouldn't have dreamed of like what kind of like career working, like starting behind my first counter would lead me towards. And
right.
Again, like just kind of this awe of like receiving this grant to like get the recognition to do this work that I think is so interesting. And it's great to see that other people think it's interesting. So yeah, I never would have thought this is what I would be doing.
It's really cool. Are you going, the subjects that you've studied so far, the women that you've met so far, are you going to keep in touch with them over the years to learn more and more?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I've like, and other than Rosa, because it's, you know, Pamela said she shared her wet sock number with me.
No way. So, yeah. Okay. So now you're really buddies.
But like, you know, I keep in touch with, Jess, who I talked about in my presentation. And like, I didn't include her in my presentation, but like Allison Lakin, I saw her last summer and like I chat with her on Instagram a lot. And, you know, yeah, I hope that all of the women I speak to, I continue to like keep a conversation going with them.
Side note, Allison, I just saw she has the seaweed cheese that I want to try.
Yes. Have you tried that? Rockweed. Yeah. I got to try that when I was visiting a friend in Maine last summer, and it just so like it coincided right when I had like just gotten the grant. So I was like, oh
yeah,
let me see who's making cheese in Maine. And Allison is fantastic. She's was so nice and so cool to talk to. And yeah, Rockweed is
That's really cool.
She's doing good things.
I want to check that out. I think it won some major awards. So
yes.
She's on my list to talk to eventually coming
up. Awesome.
So I wanted to ask you about, from your presentation, there was one profile with a woman that was a mother. So this is a modern day situation.
Yeah.
How does she take care of her kid, do the milking and make cheese? How was that for you to see?
Like, I mean,
what was that about?
I think you're probably talking about Jess.
Okay, that was Jess. Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, her youngest, Zeke, I actually don't remember how old he is, but, like, she would have him, like, when we went to talk, she just, like, had him strapped on her back for a little bit. And then also her other son, Jonah, is pretty involved on the farm as well, helps with the herd management and a bit of cheese making. So it's kind of, like, a family affair. And, yeah. And I think, you know, Jess was an example of someone who like this work brought her a lot of satisfaction along with being a mother and like being able to like either like provide this upbringing for her kids and being able to work with animals. Cause she even said, she was like, it's more about the working with the animals for her. Like,
oh,
but like cheese making is like a perk and great, but like it's like she makes cheese because she has the animals and likes to work with the animals. And for her, yeah, and she even said she like, you know, she knew she wanted to have kids like very early in life and wanted to be a mother. And this was just for her, this is a way of life that allows her to be that mother and also have a life that brings her fulfillment like outside of her children as well, and it all kind of works together in a cohesive manner.
And she was retailing the cheese as well or not at all? It was just for the family?
No, she is retailing a farm store on her land, and she actually, I won't get into this, but
no,
like
that's okay.
She had like New Jersey has some crazy laws. She had to jump through some hoops to like be able to sell her cheese, but she does sell it in like a bunch of produce and as well.
Well, yeah. But that is an interesting part of it that I think like legally as women, they have to overcome some hurdles sometimes that weren't or have changed in modern day life now, but it wasn't the case always.
No. Yeah. I mean, it's, women would sell butter and like some cheese and you know, this is centuries ago.
Right.
As like extra income for the family, but it still wasn't like a big market for these items. And it's only kind of like once the market opens up for butter and cheese and this like profitability becomes apparent that men step in and they're like, oh, we need to improve this and make more money off of it. surprise, surprise.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that is, that's unfortunate, but that's history for you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Make it bigger and possibly better, but actually not better and make more money.
Right. Yeah. So you studied art and photography.
Mm-hmm.
How is that mixing into this now?
Actually, really interestingly. In several spectrums.
Really?
So a photojournalism class that I took at school, I went to Ithaca College in Ithaca. So Finger Lakes, obviously great agricultural region.
Definitely.
And so I have this photojournalism class, which I wasn't too stoked on because I'm not really I'm not bold enough to be a journalist. But then this project where I had to choose a subject, and I'm from very rural New Jersey, a lot of cows, dairy farms, just like commodity like milk though. I was like, oh, well, let me see what kind of like dairy farmer I can find or like anyone in that realm that I can, you know, shine a light on. And I happened to be introduced to Nancy, who makes cheese or made cheese in the Finger Lakes. And that was kind of like, I grew up eating like Italian cheeses because my family is Italian, but I didn't grow up like knowing anything about cheese. So that was kind of my first foray, like farmstead cheese making. I was like, what, you know, I didn't have the background at that point to ask her any deeper questions. But, you know, I talked to her again and I included her in my presentation. So that was super cool to reconnect with her. And then on the art history side, I actually reached out to one of my professors, Jennifer Gray, who was one of my favorite art history professors. And when I had, even before I received the grant, I had just been like doing, there was a point where I was literally just like Googling crazy, like dairy maids, women in dairy, and like just seeing whatever resources I could find. And one of the resources I did find is this book called Dairy Queens. And it's about, it's art history about architectural structures. I'm totally blanking on the French word for it, but basically these
like facades,
but like full on dairies, like dairy structures, meant to replicate a functioning dairy, but of course just like, elaborate and like made of marble. And they're more these kind of, retreats for, the upper class to then associate themselves with like pastoral values. So, women
sounds
like,
familiar.
Yeah, I'm totally blanking on like all the names of, some of these more significant historical figures, but like they would have their portraits, painted in the likeness of a dairy maid and these legit gorgeous structures meant to act like a functioning dairy where they could go and retreat and like, you know, escape from city life and have this idyllic setting and experience what it is to have like country morals and stuff. So that's like, it's kind of weird how my schooling has influenced what I'm doing today.
Oh, you never know what you're going to get when you study certain things and then you mix in cheese and bang, here we are.
Right. And I mean, like that was like, like when I started my research, I had this like crazy long outline and another credit to the board. They were like, you should scale this back a little bit for now. Like set your, like, this is great, but focus a little bit. Because I mean, that's another thing, like women portraits of dairy, like how dairy maids are depicted. It's always idyllic and like,
right,
you know,
not looking stressful.
Yeah, and you know, then you can get into the whole like virgin whore complex, and that's
what,
you know,
that's another episode,
like,
kids.
Yeah, it's sorry. It's just like it's so many things where like, you know, dairy maids are like at one point are this kind of like bastion of morals and hard work, and then there's this other kind of lecherous like side of like, oh, dairy maids in the field and like, you know, any young man can come by and do whatever.
But no, it's you're just, totally right.
And this, it's this constant thing of women of just being like, be this like, you know, bastion of morals, but then also like, you know, it's like, be the Madonna, be like, you know, this sexy person. It's true though.
I mean, that's what the Dutch masters sort of painted. And then I think they had that movie with Scarlett Johansson. So I see where we're going with this and I get it. And it's a, definitely a chapter for the book, I say.
Yeah.
I say bravo for that.
Thank you.
So it sounds like you have an outline for more research. Totally. What can we kind of expect next in the, say, another year or so from you?
I would like to keep the ball rolling with reaching out to other women. And, you know, this past year it had mostly, well, it had really just been cheesemakers, and I definitely want to continue that. But then I think it would be really great to see like some of the other sides, like women in dairy sciences, and you know, how many of our like great like cheese you know, distributors and businesses are, you know, started and owned or like by women.
Only a few.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I mean,
I can tell you it's only a few, so I'm excited to see who you talk to.
So definitely, like, I think I'll, in kind of like the background, I'll keep looking for like research, like historical research and stuff, but I really want to try and keep strong, like speaking to women, because I think that's ultimately like what is going to bring me the most joy. And I think what other people are going to be enjoying the most. And then like, if I do find some like cool history stuff, I can just share that with people and they can read it themselves, you know?
Yeah. We might actually have a book for ourselves.
Yeah, exactly.
There might actually be, something for me to read about.
Well,
Mary, I wanted to thank you for coming on the show today. This was awesome.
This has been really great chatting with you, Kara.
Yeah. Thank you. You made it to Bushwick. You made it to Alberta's. Woo! Right? So, hey everyone, I just want to say, if you want to follow Mary on Instagram, you can follow her at MLKBTCH. If you want to check out the Daphne Cepha's teaching endowment, it's at DZTE 2022. And you can follow us at Cutting the Curd or myself at Kara Warden. And please listen and subscribe to Cutting the Curd via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thanks, and eat more cheese.
Bye, thanks.
Cutting the Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.